Hi, you're listening to The Self Sessions with me, Marissa McCallum. I'm a body and mindset coach, social entrepreneur, and writer. I help you discover what you want, decide how to go for it, and feel like you deserve it. In this space, we will explore all things life and what it means to be human. Sometimes it'll just be me, sometimes not. Perhaps I'll bring along some friends or a fantastic guest to open up the conversation. But in all cases, each episode will be delivered with one single intention and my mantra for life, wishing only love. Let's get started. Let's make this baby a trilogy. Yeah. Welcome to part three of Is There Something on My Face, which describes my wellness adventure following a collection of symptoms appearing in 2023. In part two, I spoke about my discovery of Reiki and the importance of working on my nervous system. This is the final episode in this mini-series, so you may want to head back and listen to parts one and two if you haven't already. If you have already listened to parts one and two, 10 more brownie points to you. We're on the home stretch. Something told me to delay recording this episode, and I now understand why. It was to experience my symptoms being witnessed on a wider scale and gain even more learning. Let me elaborate. When I shared the release of part one on social media at the end of January 2024, I did so with images of my face throughout 2023. It was so interesting to see the different responses. Some people had seemed to miss that the post about my illness was written in past tense and that the images were not from 2024. There was an assumption that I was still unwell, that the post was a cry for help, and as a result, people set about trying to cheerlead, diagnose, and fix. All things that I know I am guilty of. It made me reflect on the illusion of connection that social media creates, how we assume we know what is going on in the lives of others because of a few curated images when we may not have spoken to them in years. How seeing pain in others can make us deeply uncomfortable, and so we set about unconsciously trying to make ourselves feel better by trying to cheerlead, diagnose, and fix. I thought about how if I had been posting as a cry for help, I would have been deeply disappointed by the response. People meaning well, but actually a single line comment on how strong I am, an emoji reaction, the offer to visit me in a house I haven't lived in for 3 years, the onus being placed on me to ask for help, all would have added to the sense of isolation I experienced when I was unwell. And so here, I pause to apologise to anyone listening whom I've tried to cheerlead, diagnose, and fix through a period of pain or suffering. I apologise for not just being present with you in your pain and for not, instead of assuming, asking the question, what do you need from me right now? I have a history of not asking for help. If it's on behalf of someone else or for a good cause, like raising money for charity, no problem. I'm there, advocating, assisting, being of service. But me saying that I'm not okay, I can't hold it anymore, I need to be held, completely different. For years I've been operating as hyper-independent. Doing things myself meant I had the illusion of control. I didn't have to rely on anyone with the possibility of being let down. I didn't have to be vulnerable with the potential of being hurt. This approach was useful at times. It was a survival mechanism in the early years and later turned into being really productive, completing courses, achieving goals, ticking boxes. But hyper-independence is useless when you're collapsed in a crying heap on the floor, desperate for someone, for anyone to reassure you that you matter. Connection is a fundamental human need. In 2022, I was part of what some may consider a coaching program, but for me, it was a women's circle called Sovereign, run by Tammy Thomas. You may remember her from a previous episode called Women Who Work Too Much. During our time together, Tamu encouraged radical self-care and created a space where we could connect and feel seen. It was through being held in a group dynamic that I realised how much I'd been ignoring my basic human needs and how many ridiculously heavy things I'd attempted to hold alone. As a result, I decided at that time to invest in talking therapy. In 2023, I increased my therapy sessions to weekly. It was essential for me to have a space where I could voice thoughts without judgment, process years of events that had deeply impacted me but never been expressed, feel seen, but most importantly, have a regular touch point with another human. At the height of the illness, I realised that I'd managed to get myself into a situation where unless I had a work responsibility, I could easily go weeks without seeing anyone, speaking to anyone, the rest of the world just assuming that I was okay because I never told them otherwise. I realised how many of the relationships I had thought were close were actually built on my showing up as a strong one, where I felt I couldn't be anything other than positive and supportive. So many of them fell away when I wasn't the one messaging, arranging meetups, efforting to keep the connection alive. Therapy helped me to recognise the unhealthy relationship dynamics I've been repeating time and time again, what I'd unconsciously been suppressing to make myself fit and ensure people stayed, things like anger and sadness. It was a lot, and something that may require its own episode at a later stage. I realised how much of my identity had been enmeshed in my achievements, that my intention to recover from illness was misplaced. I'd wanted to get better so I could get back into control, get things back to how they were before, familiar, recognisable. My work, my ability to commit to a goal and achieve it, had been my way of anchoring myself, reassuring myself that things were okay. Without the things I had been heavily reliant on to determine my worth in the world, I didn't know who I was. Who was I if I wasn't bringing value to people and situations in my life? There was also a bit of shame around so much of my work being about wellness and being completely blindsided by this illness. What was the point of me? This was a really hard lesson to learn. So many of the interactions in my life had been one way or transactional, me trying to prove that I was worthy of care and love. But when I no longer had the energy to maintain them, their falling away left behind the true, honest connections in my life. A very small but authentic group of people. Part of my therapeutic process was to actively reach out to these people to tell them that I wasn't okay. It felt so alien to me. They all had things going on in their own lives, but they weren't psychic. And for me to break the habit of hyper-independence and actively send that message or make that call for support, I had to catch myself in the moments where previously I would have ignored the need to connect with someone. I needed to soften. This included emotional vulnerability, actively reaching out to people who traditionally viewed me as the strong one, inverted commas, to let them know that I was no longer feeling strong. I didn't have the energy to hold it anymore. So difficult, but so important. In therapy, instead of stuffing them down because they felt inconvenient, I could practice being with the emotions I was feeling, acknowledging them and letting them move through me. Not only was I addressing old situations where anger needed to be expressed, I'd also given myself permission to feel it in the now. I let myself slip into victim mode for a bit. I let myself dwell and wallow and feel sorry for myself. How unfair it all felt to be, having to go through this illness. Hadn't I been through enough? What had I done to deserve this? But I didn't want to stay in that state for too long. It was really appealing, but I didn't want it to be my identity going forward. I could reflect on traumatic experiences, again acknowledging their impact, but instead of reliving them and applying the pain to the current day, I'd get curious about the lessons they held and really clear about what I wanted to experience now and going forward. I realised how much I valued physical contact with someone that I trust. One of the most nourishing experiences I had during the illness was one of my closest friends coming over just to give me a hug and sit holding my hand in silence. Biologically, nurturing physical contact can generate feel-good chemicals in the body, such as oxytocin. But for me, it was also the meaning behind the action. Being loved, cared for, and held without having to do anything in return. Every so often, I would venture outside to take the bins out at night or for walks to keep my sanity. If it was raining, I could put my hood up. And in colder weather, I'd be hidden behind a highly wrapped scarf and a hat with hair covering as much of my face as possible. But in the crazy hot summer of 2023, sometimes I just had to be brave. The outside world's response was anxiety creating at the time, but so interesting thinking back to it. Most people had their eyes glued to their phones and didn't even register my existence. Every so often there would be a double take, or I'd notice people in my periphery having a little whisper. Who's to say it was even about my face, other than my paranoia and anticipation of having to explain myself to a stranger? What would I have even said? In the months that the inflammation moved around my face, imitating a world map, some days being clearer than others, some days being scabby, others being oozy, sometimes flaky, only one person ever asked me about it. A Tesco driver who was delivering my food shop. What happened to your face? He thought I'd been beaten up. He told me that he hated it when men hit women. I was a bit startled. It's stress related, I said. Like eczema, he said. Yeah, I said, grabbing my shopping and scuttling back into the sanctuary of my flat. After that, I came up with a list of responses in preparation of the same situation occurring. I'm a cage fighter. It's the beginning of the zombie apocalypse. Your breath burnt me. It's a highly contagious STD. I'm auditioning for the part of a Marvel villain. But no one else ever asked me. Maybe people were just being polite. So far, I've spoken about the stuff I did to support my body and mind, but a huge piece of the puzzle, and perhaps the most important, was deepening the relationship with myself. All parts of myself, including my spirituality. I appreciate this might be the bit where some people sort of roll their eyes to the heavens that they don't believe in, but to honour my intention to show up authentically, I'm sharing everything that I feel contributed to my recovery. There are many names for it. God, spirit, the universe, Mother Nature, the divine, the quantum field. Certain descriptions may resonate more than others with you, and I'm not here to advocate for one in particular. All I know is I faced some of my darkest moments in 2023, feeling scared and isolated. And sometimes it's only in those moments that we are staying still and quiet enough to become aware of something bigger than us. Something willing us to thrive and feel love. I sometimes felt hopeless, and the antidote to this for me was building my faith muscle through the days that the wounds on my face appeared to get worse. Through the days where my energy fell through the floor. Through the days when negative thoughts were getting dangerously loud. I did this through seeking proof, asking for signs, messages to reassure me that I was going to be okay. And I always got them. Facing, no pun intended, such challenging circumstances created the opportunity to question what was important, to become curious about life, how I had been living it, what was fueling my choices. I explored psychic mediumship, the teachings of Buddha and Jesus. I listened to talks by different spiritual teachers, such as Reverend Michael B. Beckwith. I consumed books such as Sacred Woman by Queen Afua and The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. All things to consider, often reassuring and usually boiling down to the same foundation, love. I've had a meditation practice for years, but during this period of illness, revisited different approaches and increased the amount of time I dedicated to it. Hours of going inside and being open to whatever came up. I also introduced chanting to my morning routine. Even if you put aside the ancient practices and beliefs around the power of incantation, the actual physical process of chanting can support the nervous system due to the vibration stimulating the vagus nerve. Look, paths to and relationships with spirituality are highly individual, and for me, there was something very synchronous and divinely timed about the circumstances of the illness. I was living on my own for the first time ever in my life, in a peaceful space where I felt safe. I had access to nature and I could embrace the quiet. I had enough money to support me when I was unable to work, and I was consistently brought information, people and experiences that encouraged me to finally allow the process of healing that I had been avoiding for years to take place. It didn't necessarily feel like it at the time, but I was basically on a healing spiritual retreat. I'd had elements of this illness years before, however, this time around it was the same but different. The same but deeper. The same, but now with the space and opportunity to fully hold it, to reconnect with myself in all of the ways and learn how to surrender. Yep, I said it, surrender. And it was hard. I used to think I was exceptionally patient, but realised that this had only been reserved for other people. When it came to me and my process, I wanted it done, smashed out, completed it, bruv. As soon as there was a hint of my skin clearing or energy levels being marginally higher, I would try to resume service as usual. On more than one occasion, I would try to get back to normal and into the world of work, but operating at 50% energy capacity with limited cognitive function. You could forget being enthusiastic about anything. For my own good, my body was no longer allowing me to show up in the world in that way. And as a coach, there was this huge temptation for me to extract the learning, to reflect and apply it as quickly as possible. So tempting to take a few photos and tie it up neatly into a 15-second transformation video on social media, but that was also part of the lesson. What had I been rushing for? I'd perpetually been in a rush to be productive in every last second of the day. Even after I completely cleared my calendar, thought I'd succumbed to the idea that I was going to have to rest. I still found myself creating pretend deadlines in my head. Breakfast needed to be done by this time. The crafting projects had to be completed as quickly as possible. Rushing for no reason, pushing for no reason, pushing, forcing. That illusion of control again, attaching success to completion of tasks. I kept setting dates that I needed to be better by. Previously arranged social engagements, work commitments, my birthday. The stress of which probably delayed my recovery. I needed to do what my third favourite and final driving instructor kept advising me to do before I passed my test and chill it. I needed to calm down, take the pressure off. This meant that my first trip abroad in 3 years had my actual face looking slightly different to my passport photo face, but it was worth it. I was lucky enough to travel to Canada with a close friend, and my days walking in ancient forests and witnessing awe-inspiring nature filled up my soul. Once again, I felt connected to something bigger than me. I was nourished by a sense of expansion, simplicity, and possibility. My body had to intervene on my behalf, physically stop me so that I could strip away all of the unhealthy, unsustainable things in my life that I'd been carrying out of habit. I needed to slow down to do that properly. And to do it properly, I had to let go, surrender to what life, God, the divine, the universe was sharing with me and trust it would be for my highest good. It was a lesson in genuine self-love. Day after day, showing up for nobody but myself, focusing on healing because I deserved to feel better, not because of the role and assumed responsibilities I'd taken on in other people's lives. Then and only then could I be of greater service in the world by having more experiences to learn from and share. I had to allow myself to have the full experience, give myself time to integrate what I was learning, and so I slowed down. My skin began to heal. My hair began to grow back. My sleep became deeper and more restorative. My cognitive function improved. My mood elevated. I felt grounded in my body. I had increased energy for longer periods of time. My life force and vitality had returned on a greater scale than I can ever remember. All good stuff. The things I'd been desperate to regain in the beginning, but the experience had actually changed me in ways I could never have imagined at the start of 2023. I had a new set of priorities, including a strengthened commitment to myself. I had a greater clarity of intention, desires, and purpose. I felt less attachment to people, places, and things. I'd identified unhealthy patterns of behaviour that no longer served me and could now actively change them. I'd deepened my relationship with myself, my intuition, and the divine. At the time of recording this episode, it's Wednesday, the 21st of February, 2024, and I have scars on my face. They will fade. They are fading. The key thing is that I'm well, and I will never forget 2023. Over the course of these three episodes, I've spoken about food, homeopathy, movement, Reiki, the nervous system, support, authentic connection, self-expression, meditation, and faith. I had to take a holistic approach, and because I was applying so many elements at once, I can't tell you the one thing that made everything better. The whole process was non-linear. In other words, it wasn't a nice set of clearly marked stages in one direction. There were significant periods of feeling like crap, of being bored, the temptation to give up, and so much frustration when progress appeared to be made, only to have another flare-up. I had to allow for time to pass. We live in a society addicted to quick fixes and biohacking. Realistically, some of the changes I applied would take weeks, maybe even months of consistent application before the effects would be physically obvious or visible. Days were dedicated to getting better, but I had to keep reminding myself that results would not be immediate. Just like planting a seed, you have to tend to it and resist the urge to dig it up every 5 seconds to see if it's sprouted yet. I had to drop expectations and make space for what was wanting to emerge at its own pace. I feel like part of my healing was about remembering that I'm inherently valuable. And it really is about being instead of doing. Another beautiful side effect of healing the physical symptoms that I had was the opportunity to build my capacity to feel so-called negative emotions, inverted commas, which means that I can now feel more at the other end of the scale or spectrum. Really feel into elements such as joy and peace. I want to give a shout out to my body. It knew that if the illness had not been reflected on my face for the world to see, I would not have stopped. I would have stubbornly ignored it and forced my way on. So I want to thank my body and honour how smart it is. Thank you. I appreciate everything you do for me. I'm so grateful for you. And I feel like I listen to my body more now. I feel like I listen more now in general to my intuition, to the whispers of life that will guide me forward in a healthy, aligned, authentic way. In these last few episodes, I've done what I can to share the things I experienced, but some things cannot be articulated in words. The sheer magnitude of what took place over 2023 means that I feel like I have changed irreversibly. I've reassessed, released, and renewed. My life is very different now. I wonder if you'll be able to tell. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Self Sessions. If you did, please share, like, subscribe, and stay in touch by heading over to marissamccallum.com. I am, of course, until next time, wishing only love.